our family members can enter Lord Vishnu and begin to speak. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of God, has said, "My dear King Prithu, Indra, the King of Heaven, has disturbed your execution of 100 sacrifices. Now he has come with me to be forgiven by you, therefore excuse him." Therefore, this verse, the word Atmanam, is very significant. It's a custom among yogis and jnanis to address one another as oneself, for the transcendental never accepts a living being to be the body. Since the individual self is the part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of God, and this self is the sufferer, qualitatively not different. As the next verse will explain, the body is only a superficial covering, constantly in advanced transcendental, which will not make a distinction between oneself and the other. Okay, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others is considered best among human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is a different soul. Therefore, in daily life, we find that when a madman commits murder, he is excused, even by a high court judge. The idea is that a living entity is always pure, because he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of God. When he falls into the clutches of material energy, he becomes a victim of his material nature. And whatever he does under the influence of material nature. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Nakartaram Nakarmani Mokasya Srijati Prabhu Nakama Falasal Yoga Savanas Tupi Prabhata Tevi. Embodied spirit master, the city of his body does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is an enigma of the modes of material nature. Actually, the living entity of his soul does not do anything. Everything is done under the influence of the modes of material nature. When a man has disease, the symptom of the disease becomes the source of all kinds of pain. Those who are advanced in transcendental consciousness or Krishna consciousness are never envious, either of the soul or the activities of the soul under the influence of material nature. Advanced transcendentalists are called Sudhiya. Sudhi means intelligence. Sudhi means highly advanced. And Sudhi means devotee. One who is both devoted and highly advanced in intelligence does not take action against the soul or the body. If there is any discrepancy, he forgives. It is said that forgiveness is the quality of those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge. If a personality like you are so much advanced because of executing instructions of the previous acharyas is carried away by the influence of my material energy, and all your advancement may be considered simply a waste of time. Therefore, in this verse, the word Vrida Sevaya is very significant. Vrida means old, Sevaya means by service. Perfect knowledge is acquired from the acharya of liberated souls. No one can be perfect in knowledge without being trained by the Parampara system. Vrida Maharaj was completely trained in that line, therefore, he did not deserve to be considered an ordinary man. An ordinary man who has only a conception of bodily existence is always bewildered by the modes of material nature. Those who are in full knowledge of the bodily conception of life, who know that this body is composed of nations, desires, and activities resulting from illusion, do not become addicted to the body. Purport has stated in the previous verse, those with good intellect do not accept themselves to be the body. Being a creation of nations, the body has two types of activities in the bodily concept. One, you think that sense regulation will help, but we are an illusion. Another kind of illusion is to think that one will be happy by trying to satisfy the desires that simply arise from the illusory body, or by attaining elevation to the higher planetary systems, or by performing various types of Vedic rituals. This is all illusion. Similarly, material activities performed for political emancipation, social and humanitarian activities performed with an idea that people of the world will be happy are also illusory because the basic principle of the bodily conception, which is illusory. Whatever we desire before the bodily conception is all illusory. In other words, Lord Vishnu informed Prithu Maharaj that although the sacrificial performance set an example for ordinary people, there was no need for such sacrificial performances as far as the personal self was concerned. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunya Bhava Arjuna Nirdalo Nityasattva Stodero Vishema Atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. be free from all dualities and from all anxiety for gain and safety and reestablishing the self. The ritualistic performances recommended in the Vedas mainly depend on the three modes of material nature. Consequently, Arjuna was advised to transcend the Vedic activities. The activities Arjuna was advised to perform are the transcendental activities of devotional service. Translation of the great sage of Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, being very much satisfied by the performance of 99 heart sacrifices, the Supreme Personality of God and Lord Vishnu appeared on the scene, accompanying him with King Indra. Lord Vishnu then began to speak. So this chapter is dedicated to the description of Vishnu appearing at the sacrifice of Prithu Maharaj. And here we see that he has given some instructions to Prithu. Though we know that Prithu is a Chaktavesh avatar, and therefore he doesn't really need instructions, just as Arjuna, because he's a Nityasiddha devotee of Krishna, he also doesn't need instruction, but yet he accepts instruction in Bhagavad Gita. So here Vishnu gives instruction to Prithu, who's playing the role of a king. And here he's giving a similar lecture as Krishna gives to Arjuna. So Krishna began his discourse by telling Arjuna that he's not the material body, he's Atma. And we see here that Vishnu is telling the same thing to Prithu. In other words, he's saying one should be intelligent and understand the difference between soul and body. And why? Because all the problems in the material world arise from that. So in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was in a problem, not wanting to fight. And that was the explanation is due to bodily deprivation. So therefore, you know, Krishna said, you're not the body at all, you're the soul. So here, the situation is a little different. The sacrifices were taking place and Indra competed. So it's not exactly a battle as at Kurukshetra or killing took place, but nevertheless there was a conflict of interest. So Vishnu takes the same strategy and says, you shouldn't worry about this because you're not the body. So you are attached to doing horse sacrifices. 100 horse sacrifices, but you should not be attached to that. One reason, of course, is the activity itself is karma kanda. It has to do with material advancement, and ultimately that is not the highest activity for the people at large or for you. So your desire should not be to go to Svarga Loka, but to attain the spiritual world. So of course sacrifices are not very essential for that. And as for the people, generally the king should take care of the welfare of the people. But why do horse sacrifices? The ultimate good for the people also is bhakti, and not these karmakanda activities. So that's one idea. But the other, of course, is the idea of competition. So you should not try to compete with Indra, because the idea of competition also is based upon material identification. Competition means we want to win. And we want to win in the material world. So we identify with the material body, and then we want to win with that material body. So this is a competition is based upon material identity. So the solution to this also is to understand we're not the material body. We are soul, not body. And that the illusion of competition or the illusion of well-being based on body is useless. Ultimately, it's not a solution to any problem. So in either case, in Bhagavad Gita or here, the Bhagavatam, the solution to these problems is to understand that we're not the material body. Now this, of course, is a preliminary solution. It's not a final solution. It's a temporary solution. So if we understand we're not the body, that is jnana. So jnana is superior to karma. Our sacrifices are karma. Samkhya yoga is jnana. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna emphasizes the jnana to get rid of Arjuna's illusion. So here, and of course Arjuna was arguing on the basis of karma. I can't kill the relatives because if I do, then overpopulation will result in bad population, etc. And there will be no struggle rights. So here, the case is, don't do the horse sacrifice because they are karma. And instead understand the higher principle is jnana. I want you to be interested in separating body from atma. So that is the immediate solution to this problem. But, as I said, it's not the final solution because we know that jnana is not the ultimate goal. Higher than jnana is bhakti. Therefore, the jnana solution is not the final solution. Why? Because one reason is to get that jnana and be established in that jnana is very difficult. The process of jnana and realization of atma is difficult for the embodied soul. And secondly, even if we attain this liberation from material problems, that is not complete bliss. It is only absence of pain. So therefore, it is the process of bhakti which will give us higher bliss. But that depends upon a realization of the Supreme Lord as well as the Atma. And the process of bhakti is easier. So we cannot recommend jnana for the population at large. So though Vishnu is here recommending, yet we should understand it not the body or the Atma. He cannot preach that to everybody in the kingdom. They're not qualified for that. And similarly in Bhagavad Gita, though Krishna preaches jnana, he also reverts to the idea, oh, you're not qualified for jnana, Arjuna, you should do karma yoga. So later on he goes back to karma yoga and references that for Arjuna and says he's not qualified for jnana. So for the public at large, the process of jnana is not practical. And therefore they have karma yoga. But the problem is that that's the lowest type of spiritual life. It's indirect, it's not even spiritual life, it's less than that. So the solution lies in the fact that bhakti is the highest process and the ultimate process. At the same time, everybody's qualified for it. So instead of recommending karma for people who are unqualified for jnana as the solution to the problem, we recommend bhakti yoga. Everybody can do that, whereas everyone cannot do jnana. At the same time, it's higher than karma or jnana. And there's nothing higher than bhakti. So this is the solution, the actual solution to the problem, rather than jnana. So that is why at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, forget all the dharmas, forget karma yoga, jnana yoga, and asanga yoga, and simply do bhakti yoga. So that is the higher solution. So we should not be confused and think that the solution to everything is simply to understand you're not the body or the atma. So if one worships the Supreme Lord in devotion, then like the watering the root of the tree, everything is accomplished. Therefore, whatever problems we have in the material world will be solved. So we get free from material miseries, which is the goal of jnana, to get rid of illusion, etc. So by performing bhakti, that is accomplished. And whatever is accomplished in karma yoga, that is supplying material necessities, that is also supplied by bhakti. But bhakti supplies more than that. Furthermore, karma is not independent. Of course, it is only a partial process, and even if one achieves its goal, It is not a final goal, so it's not a complete process. But even the practice itself of attaining material things is not complete without bhakti. In karma yoga, one has to worship Vishnu as well as devatas. If one doesn't, one cannot get the results. And even jnana, if one practices without bhakti, one cannot get liberation. So the jnani and the karmi both have to practice bhakti in a small portion at least. And then they will get results, material results or liberation. And without that, they don't get results. So these processes are not independent processes, nor are they complete processes. They're partial processes and dependent on bhakti also. Okay? So therefore, the simple solution is just to bhakti. Okay? So it will supply everything, because only by bhakti does karma get its results, and only by bhakti does jnana get its results. So if you do bhakti, you can get the results of karma and jnana. But one also gets more than that. And whereas karma and jnana have certain qualifications, bhakti is beyond that. Whoever is doing karma can do bhakti, and whoever is doing jnana can do bhakti. Everybody can do bhakti. So it is the recommended process. So here the Lord is speaking, and here he begins his discourse by talking about this jnana. Just as Krishna spoke to Arjuna about Atmajnani. So that is one step. So why not just say bhakti in the beginning? So one reason is that in the scriptures, in Upanishads, they take a gradual approach. Just as we have karma, jnana, sangha yoga, and bhakti is a gradual approach. So in speaking also, Arjuna and Krishna, and here Vishnu, they begin with overcome karma by jnana. And then once you've understood that, then you do bhakti. So one doesn't have to necessarily practice, but at least one has to have some knowledge of the difference between soul and body as a preliminary. And then we get advanced to understand that there is a difference between Atma and Supreme Lord. So that is another reason why the speech here begins with discussion of Atma rather than the Supreme Lord. So anyway, the idea is that Vishnu is here trying to convince Prithu that not doing 100 horse sacrifices is the proper thing to do. Therefore, one should only do 99 horse sacrifices. So he's using this jnana argument that jnana is superior to karma. He's using this type of argument to advance his proposal. In Bhagavad Gita, we also see that Krishna does the same thing with Arjuna to get him to fight. And first he uses jnana, then he uses karma, then he uses bhakti. So at convenient places, he will utilize different arguments. And we'll find that Krishna also uses arguments in the when he wants to convince Nanda Maharaj to stop the sacrifice of Indra. So he uses arguments from Karmakanda and Karma Mimamsa to stop the sacrifice to Indra. So he uses all sorts of different arguments, which are not necessarily ultimate arguments or good arguments, but just for accomplishing his immediate purpose. So therefore we should understand that though Vishnu is speaking like this, it is not the ultimate conclusion. It is better than karma, but it's also not the ultimate conclusion.
And then Jnana Yoga was spoken to them, but population in general have, and they don't even follow Karma Yoga. I mean, Lord is following a gradual approach.
Yeah.
And in both these cases, in this particular case, the people who are both of them are following the Karma Yoga process.
Yeah.
But if you look at present times, people don't know what Karma Yoga is.
Yeah, so that is why. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, do bhakti yoga, because the other process is not practical. In chapter 12 also, he says, just do bhakti, don't go through this practice of karma, jnana, yoga, then bhakti. Because in Kali Yuga it's not practical anyway.
Karma can be changed.
Huh?
Time can be changed.
Time will change.
Time changes every moment. What do you mean by time? Kali Yuga? Kali Yuga will change into Satya Yuga after 400,000 years.
What about Maharaj? For bhakti, some knowledge is required. For bhakti, some jnana is required.
For bhakti, bhakti is required. Whatever jnana is in bhakti is also part of bhakti. For instance, the Bhagavad jnana or Sambandha jnana, that knowledge is bhakti. By other jnana we mean study of Vedanta to understand the difference between Atma and soul. That is a different type of jnana. This knowledge of the Supreme Lord Bhagavatam we don't call jnana in the same way. It's not when we talk about jnana as dependent on bhakti. That we don't mean that jnana, we mean the jnana and study of Vedanta.
How do we then differentiate between, for example, this portion is jnana and the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita Krishna is explaining that is jnana? How do you differentiate between this jnana and that jnana?
Which jnana? Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
Well, Bhagavad Gita, we understand that between soul, atma, and God, and through that we conclude bhakti. The other jnana is we understand that there's soul and body, and then we get liberation. So that jnana is the other type of jnana. It ends with liberation. Oh, well, in the material world one can achieve results in any case, whether one practices a yoga or not a yoga. We do activities, we get immediate results, and we get long-term results in terms of karma, and we also enjoy results from previous karmas. So all that's there automatically whether you do a yoga system or not. But if you don't do any yoga system, it is all unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen next, what karma you're going to get or whatever. If you do karma yoga, that is more predictable. If you follow the rules of karma, then gradually you advance. If you don't follow the rules and do anything you want, you may advance if you're real lucky, but most likely you won't. You'll do the opposite. By sinful activities, you'll be demoted the next time.
We usually find that the Lord instructs only when some conflict occurs. He doesn't prevent that conflict itself and instruct the people. So does it mean that all the conflicts, whatever happens, is only the leela of the Lord?
No, but he also comes and when he instructs that is to prevent further conflicts. Nevertheless, the jivas are not that intelligent, so therefore they don't follow it. He's written scripture so that they'll follow, but then they don't follow, then he has to come again and instruct again. So it is the nature of the jivas in the material world that they are not very intelligent, so that's why the Lord has to continually come with instructions. Major commentator, he appeared several hundred years after Lord Chaitanya's and the Goswamis. Maybe the last great commentator in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And quite, of course, there's Baladev right next to him, but he is prominent because of his great realization in terms of rasa. His contribution, of course, is his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita and his commentary on all of Bhagavatam, including the 10th canto, but all the other cantos as well. That's major work. But besides that, he also wrote other works, many of which are very high in rasa. And of course, he also wrote an elaborate commentary on the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu and Pujjavalmani. So he wrote many commentaries on the works of the Goswamis as well as the Bhagavatam. And he also wrote independent works, poetic works, and a few prose works as well. So he was quite prolific. And as I said, he's quite also prominent in Sampradaya because of his appreciation of the highest types of rasa.
संतरा सुशीमत पादभं की जय जगदलाल महाराज की जय गोविंद जी की जय नमो गोपाल जी जय तागोर तमन
जी सगनाथ दास गोस्वामी सपीरस दियो सो वही विंड आस्क कर दे आई टोल्ड इन द मॉर्निंग इट इज सगनाथ दास गोस्वामी सपीरस दे That message is also, I told you in the morning, it's a Jagannath Das appearance
day. Come on.